Really pleased to welcome to the program David Dobrin. David's the president of the board of the Friends of the Blue Hills to chat a little bit about that organization and about a virtual fundraiser that's coming up. So David, nice to meet you.
Great, thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Of course, the Blue Hills, a large part of it is in the city of Quincy. People don't really realize, you know, it's an urban city, major metropolis, but there's still a big part of the reservation right in the city.
Yeah. You know, it's there are six towns that border the Blue Hills, and the largest acreage is Quincy. Almost 40 or 45% of the Blue Hills, 7,000 acres, is in Quincy, and we try to draw those Quincy residents into the Blue Hills, and part of it is I think they relate more to the beach, the coast kind of community. They identify more into the coastal, but yeah, Quincy is a great town and a big part of the Blue Hills.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure folks in the West Quincy area are more familiar with the Blue Hills than, say, folks down Quincy Point. But nevertheless, it's there for everybody.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about the Friends group, if you could, David.
Yeah. I appreciate the opportunity. So, just maybe starting from the beginning, the Blue Hills Reservation, 7,000 acres. It's 125 miles of trails. There are 22 hills with four peaks, and one of them is about 630 feet tall. So significant peaks for this area. There are two ponds, and it's open 365 days of the year, free of charge, right? It's a state-run park that does not charge for parking. There's no entrance fees. And the Friends of the Blue Hills was formed 41 years ago to help preserve, protect, and promote the Blue Hills. And that's our mission statement. It's the preservers. We are 100% funded by donations, by either individual members, or we get sponsors from local restaurants and companies and corporations at different events. We get no money from the state. We don't sell anything. We don't have merchandise that we sell, so it's 100% funded. We have about 8,000 contacts in our database, and again, about 1,000 of them are paying members. We have three staff. We have an executive director, assistant executive director, and we have somebody that helps with membership and membership outreach. And we have a number of different programs. We do a lot. We have four major events a year, one each season. Our signature activity is trail maintenance. It's something we've been doing for years. The state park system, the DCR, Department of Conservation and Recreation, they just don't have the funds or the manpower to do it. So we've been doing it from April to October, one Saturday a month. We put in thousands of volunteer hours every year to make sure that the trails are cleared, they're clean, there's water runoff. We have a number of other events too, but it's a great organization. It's fairly well known, and those of us who are involved are pretty passionate about it.
Yeah. How did you yourself get involved? What was it that it drew you to the group?
Yeah. So I live in Milton. And by the way, Quincy, I'm very active in Quincy. We've been members of the Quincy Y for almost 20 years. Back when, it was the old one. All four of my kids were on the Stripers. At some point, my wife's at the Quincy Y 3-4 days a week. we have a lot of friends in Quincy. We have a great relationship with Councilor Palmucci, whose ward is in the Blue Hills. I've attended some Discovery Quincy events. So great, great, great town, a lot of pride. I live about a mile from the Blue Hills. And when we first moved here 20 years ago, I used to run just the streets, just a couple of miles. And then I started running marathons. And one day I decided to just try trail running. I mean, it's right there. And I loved it. Right. I just love the solitude of it. I love the quietness. I love entering a dark forest and I'm going up and down hills. So I started spending a lot of time in there. And then as my kids were born, my oldest is 18, my youngest is 10. We started spending time in there. Like many of you, like many of us, go up to the top of the observatory or go to the pond. And I just found myself going there more and more. And I met a few people who were involved with Friends of the Blue Hills and they reached out to me. I'm an avid trail runner. I do ultra marathons. So we spent a lot of hours in there and the executive director and this woman, Ann Comer at the time, who was with Friends of the Blue Hills, reached out to me, asked me if I wanted to get involved. So I've been on the board for 6 years, and I've been president of the board for 3.
And how have you seen the group kind of change in you know, in your tenure at least?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I'm all for development. I'm all for capitalism, but if it's done right. And what I've seen is two shifts. One, we get more involved in advocacy because there are a lot of developers that want to take parts of the Blue Hills and put up hotels, put up office buildings. And they want to do it in areas that are zoned for no development, not even residential. So I've seen, and the Blue Hills, Friends of the Blue Hills have been working on this for a long time, but it just seems to become more aggressive over the last 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. So we're very involved with the planning boards for all 6 towns, with the conservation commissions for all 6 towns. And you know, we have a lawyer on the board who's a conservation lawyer. So I've seen a big focus on stopping those projects, because I'm all for development if it's done right. And then the other area really is as budgets get cut, we need to do more physical work in the Blue Hills. This trail maintenance program is fantastic. We pull invasive weeds that come in. We have a big event every year. And we work very closely with the commissioner of the DCR and his staff to do a lot of the physical stuff. Just because, you know, budgets get cut. I mean, at one point, there were a number of rangers in the Blue Hills. Now there's one ranger for a section that includes multiple different parks.
So folks listening, what would your advice be to them if they want to maintain the reservation and keep it as is?
Yeah, I ask you to go to friendsofthebluehills.org and at least sign up for our email outreach. You don't have to become, I would love if you became a member, a paying member, but you don't have to, because we keep our members up to date on anything that's going to impact the Blue Hills. Some of it's negative, like somebody wants to build on it, right? Or there's some kind of threat. Some of it's really interesting stuff, like the citizen science stuff, where a professor asked for volunteers to walk around with an app and record the sounds that you get in the Blue Hills. You know, we work on impact of airplane noise over the Blue Hills. One of our board members is the chair of the biology department at UMass Boston. And he gets involved in a number of initiatives that we ask our members to. So some of it's fun. I mean, some of our members can get involved from behind the computer screen. We ask members to contact local legislators if there's something that's being voted on that impacts the Blue Hills. And then just get out to the park. The best advocacy for the park is when there's a lot of people there. I mean, it's the best way to protect it is to show how important it is.
Yeah, I think especially during this time that we're in right now, this pandemic, it's so important to have these, you know, outdoor spaces to go to enjoy a little bit of nature and get a little respite from what we're all dealing with. So I think we value it even more at this time.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable to see the increase in visitors since the pandemic really took hold in the beginning of March. And the DCR never shut the park down. Now, there are times when they had to shut the parking lot down because it was too busy, but not once have they not allowed people to get out in the park. And in fact, and they shut down other parks, other DCR parks in the state, mm-hmm. just because of use. But, you know, the Blue Hills, so many people use it not just to deal with the psychological stress of the current environment that we're in, both COVID and civil unrest. People have been going there to deal with depression, with divorce, with death in the family. You know, a good friend of mine, a police officer, just dealt with a really serious period of depression just by walking with his dog in the Blue Hills. So it's something that people need, not just physical health, but mental health.
Yeah, and do the friends actually play a role in reaching out to the, say, public school students with educational type programs, or inviting them, you know, to the reservation?
Yep. So one of the programs that we do is, first we start with little kids. We have something called a peekaboo hike. It's hosted by us every week. It's for parents with little kids. And there's a program that this woman, Denny Swenson, who was the president before me and Judy did, reaching out to the elementary schools in Milton to talk about safety and the ecology part of the Blue Hills. Things like avoiding ticks, right? Being aware of ticks, about what it means to protect reservations. And we call it shared space. It's public land that everybody shares. So we absolutely have an outreach program to the local elementary schools. What we would love to do more is get the high school seniors who are interested in some kind of conservation field to get more involved. Because there are volunteer opportunities for high school kids that want to get involved in that kind of field, forestry, and anything related to shared public land.
Yeah. Now, the Trailside Museum, is that part of the Blue Hills or is that a separate entity?
Yeah, that's a separate entity. So there's something called a Coalition to the Blue Hills. And there are a number of organizations that rely on the DCR land for the Blue Hills. The Trailside Museum, which is great. We honored the outgoing executive director last year. He's been there for, I think, 40 years. Separate organization, but they're part of the coalition. The observatory, which has been there since, I think, 1884. The Blue Hills was officially designated a state reservation in 1893. Okay. But the Blue Hill was officially recognized in 1778 to put beacons up for ships coming in. So you have the Trailside Museum, the observatory, Broderick Stables, which is over on the other side next to the police barracks, in a historic building with a beautiful roof on it. And then you have Brookwood Farm, which sits on the Blue Hills as well. It's a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. And then, of course, the ski area. So all separate entities with their own organizations, their own funding. But we get together because we all rely on the physical space of the Blue Hills.
Okay. And there used to be a Boy Scout camp years ago. I don't know if it's still there or not.
It's still there. Yeah. So the Boy Scout camp sort of operates a little separately. They're not part of the coalition. And it's technically on the Blue Hills, I think. But it's really set aside in an area that not many hikers really get to.
Yeah.
But it's still there. It's right after there's a ice skating rink near it called Ulin Rink. Yep. And then you have the book camp.
Right. I think so many people probably have experienced these things throughout their life, but don't realize that they're part of the Blue Hills Reservation. I personally grew up in the shadow of it in Dedham, believe it or not, but could see, you know, a great Blue Hill from my house. Live literally in the other side of the shadow in Randolph now. And, you know, went to school just up the street in Milton and visited the Trailside Museum all the time. So it's you know, a respite in an urban area, something that maybe some kids in big cities would never have a chance to get in touch with nature if it weren't there.
You're 100% correct. You know, one of the things I love doing the most is calling members that give us donations. And I try to call them all as well as some other board members. And most of them don't pick up because it's a foreign number. But when they do pick up, it's great to hear about their history at the Blue Hills. I talked to a couple of elderly people that said they remember driving up the highway and seeing the Blue Hills off in the distance. And that's, you know, going to visit an aunt or something in Boston, that's the first thing that they remember seeing. There's a large part of the Blue Hills was built by members of the Civilian Conservation Corps, which was an FDR funded program during the Great Depression to put young men at work. And there's a CCC camp in the Blue Hills. And to this day, there's a site with a plaque describing what it was. And then if you go to the visitor center, which is by Houghton's, and you go inside, there are pictures of these young men that work there. And I've been on calls with people that said their father was a member of the CCC camp in Milton.
Wow.
Elliott Tower was built by it. A lot of the culverts you see on the side of trails, a lot of the trails were built by the men of CCC. So there's just this tremendous amount of interesting tidbits and facts that people don't even realize about the Blue Hills.
And of course there's the Native American history that goes back before that.
You're bringing up great points. So Massachusetts is an Algonquin word meaning people of the hills, people of the great hills. So that the word Massachusetts comes from people of the Blue Hills. There's granite. And there's a granite quarry that everybody knows about in Quincy. What they don't realize, though, is Indian tribes from hundreds of miles away used to come to the Blue Hills to harvest the quarry, the rock, to take back for tools. We, at one of our celebrations, our guest speaker was the chief archaeologist for Boston. And he just went through how, if you walk, you can see on the side carvings of some of the granite where the Indians came to get the rock. Tremendous amount of history. Even, you know, the reason they called Blue Hills is when the explorers came, when they saw it from a distance, it had this blue hue because of a type of rock that's in there. I agree. It's really amazing that what we have a lot of history from the 1750s or, you know, the 1650s on, because it's recorded history. What we're really focusing on now is what's the history for the previous 2000 years, right? Before people settled here, before the explorers came, what's the history when the Indians roamed the Blue Hills? I think people would love to know that.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Can we talk a little bit about the way the Friends of the Blue Hills sustains itself and how you're dealing in this pandemic, but still moving forward?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're 100% donation. So a majority of our revenue and our budget is from individual donations. It's $30 up to, some people give us a couple thousand. We appreciate anything people can give us. And then we have four signature events a year, but one of them is our fundraiser. It's called the annual celebration. And that generally provides about 25% of our total budget for the year. We get corporate sponsors. We have a ton of auction items for six in the Blue Hills, all impacted, right? People are more careful with their individual donations. Restaurants that donate are really struggling. So we can't ask them to help donate. Large corporations like Reebok have moved out. And then of course, our annual celebration, a big fundraiser, will probably be a very conservative organization. So we'll be fine. Our finance person on the board has set us up, so we'll be fine during the pandemic. But financially, it hurt a little bit. And then, of course, we couldn't do things in person, which really hurts. We couldn't do the Peekaboo hikes. We couldn't do the trail maintenance that had to shut down. There's usually a fishing festival in the summer that we participate in. That was canceled. Sugar Maple Days we participate in, which is a great event in March. They show how you make syrup, and it's really a lot of fun. That was canceled. So it's been a struggle, but we're still active over the phone. So we're doing what we can.
Sure. So how do folks participate in this virtual fundraiser?
Yeah, there's no cost. We ask for a donation, but there is no cost. And what's really interesting, because it's virtual, we're doing things a little bit different this year. Normally, the event, we give out some awards. We recognize some community partners, recognize some individuals. We usually have a cash bar and plenty of food and desserts. And then we have a guest speaker. And we've had great, great guest speakers. Last year, we had our highest attendance because we had an author. His name was Tom Ryan, who wrote a fairly popular book called Following Atticus, about his time dealing with depression and weight loss with his dog in the White Mountains. So this year we're doing a little bit different. We're going to start with six breakout rooms. So if you come and register, you can go into a breakout room to learn about what are the best hikes in the Blue Hills. How do you deal with climate change and how does that impact the Blue Hills? We're doing one on tips on trail running. All right, so you can choose from one of six different breakouts. We do that for a half an hour. And then our guest speaker is another author. It's this gentleman named Derek Lugo, who wrote a book called The Unlikely Thru-Hiker about hiking Appalachian Trail. I read it, great book. He's an African-American guy that grew up in New York City, had never hiked, had never spent a night in a tent. He bought the stuff, took a train down to Georgia. After reading Bill Bryson's A Walk in the Woods, he just did it, and he finished the through hike. He did the entire 2,100 miles or whatever it is. So he's going to be our guest this year. So yeah, come down, join up. We have auction items online, 25 really interesting auction items. Buy raffle tickets for a catered dinner for six in the Blue Hills. And then just, I think people are going to love it. Sit back in comfort of their own home have a glass of wine and watch the speaker.
Yeah, it does sound like fun, actually. It's in some ways, you might have a better attendance of folks who couldn't attend in person before.
I totally agree. Yep, I totally agree.
Yeah. Do you think, David, the Friends will be able to, use any of this technology that we've come to know throughout the pandemic or any other aspects in the future, post-pandemic?
Yeah, I think, it's funny. It kind of mirrors how most of us are dealing with this in our personal lives. I personally travel for work, and I haven't been on a plane since March 12th. Wow. And life goes on, right? I mean, we are all learning to work remotely and use technology to fill the gaps in how we communicate with others, right? We thought everything has to be done in person, but that's not true. So I think, I think we'll continue to use virtual meetings, whether it's Zoom or phone calls. But then more importantly, we're starting to use apps, smartphone apps to do things that we couldn't before. We mentioned the citizen science projects to track different things. We could track noise, we could track movement. We can ask people to take pictures and record invasive plants, if they see something that they've never seen before. So we continue to evolve. We also want to do things like if somebody has an app and they're hiking in the Blue Hills and they're interested in some interesting piece of information, there are 16 things in the Blue Hills that are on the National Registry of Historic Places. Oh. Like, people don't even know that. So we're working on, maybe you click a button that tells you where you are based on your geolocation, some interesting piece of information. Because our membership tends to skew a little bit older, and we really need to engage younger, more tech savvy digital natives. And to do that, I think we have to engage them where they are interested in talking to us, which is through technology.
Yeah, but are the Friends on social media at all?
Yep, we have, I'm gonna get these numbers wrong. We have about 2,000 Instagram followers, about 1,400 Facebook followers, and we're on Twitter. Yep, and we're very active. We have a great photo contest where we give a $250 gift card, and people can submit their photos on Instagram by tagging us on Facebook or on Twitter. We're absolutely, we put out a lot of information on our Facebook page.
I think the app is a great idea. Personally, I've walked the Red Dot Trail many times. I would love to know where I am on that trail, in relation to the reservation. So things like that. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm curious. I do want to ask you, I know that every year around this time of year, the deer hunt gets to be a controversial issue. Is that something that Friends deal with at all?
Yeah, the history there is, there's a environmental bond bill that says if the deer population reaches a certain amount, the state has to take action. And before I was on the board, we had sided with the state to take action. There was some question about the actual count, whether it was accurate or not. Nobody wants hunting in the Blue Hills, right? There's plenty of places for hunters to hunt. Blue Hills is so close to homes. It's so packed, right? It's close to roads. I don't think anybody wants it. This year, they're just doing the archery hunting, not shotgun hunting. Okay. So I think there's a new administration in the DCR. There's a new commissioner. So I think they're going to take another look at it. It's very controversial. We've been to the town meetings where the state got up there. People are very passionate, which is great, right? It's great that people are passionate. We just hope, that they understand that if there is a large deer population, it has an impact on the environment, right? But they also hope that we don't advocate for hunting. We advocate for ecology. And our mission statement is to preserve and protect the Blue Hills. But let's just hope that hunting, they'll do archery this year, and maybe next year, hopefully, we'll come up with some other solution.
Okay. We should let folks know that Friends of the Blue Hills is a registered 501c3, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yep. So any donations are tax deductible.
100% correct. Yep. Yep. Thank you for saying that.
Sure. Anything else we should add, do you think, right now?
Yeah. The only thing I encourage anyone who's doesn't, like you had said, who's lived here for a while, get out and explore the Blue Hills. I mean, get out and explore. And anyway, get outside. The Blue Hills Reservation has a ton of interesting little tidbits around there. from the observatory to the CCC camp, there are, you know, it's broken up because of different roads, Chickatobit and Unquity and Route 28 and 93. Find a section, go about it by Ponkapog, you know, doing the Ponkapog loops 4 miles, some of it's carriage trails, some of it's a little technical. It's a great hike. Go up to, if I tell people, if people say, if I had one thing to do with the Blue Hills, I tell them to go to the top of Buck. Buck Hill is there's a number of ways to get there. It's a 360 unobstructed view. You see the harbor, you see Wachusett's. It is a fantastic view. If you need something a little bit easier and stable on your feet, take the access road up to the Great Blue. Go up to the top of Elliott Tower. Right, it's just, there's so many things to do in the Blue Hills. It's a great resource. It's the largest metropolitan state-owned or public-owned park in the country. Wow. It's the highest coastal view from Maine to Florida. So great views, great history. And think about, you know, checking out friendsofthebluehills.com. We have a lot of information there. Sign up for our email blasts. And if you feel like it, become a member.
Are there actual duties to be a member, David, that you have to do?
We just ask members to be environmentalists, okay. Be conservationists. There's no duty, right? There's no criteria. Yep. It's just we ask anybody to help support our mission, which is to preserve and protect the Blue Hills.
It's easy enough, seems like, right? Right. Friendsofthebluehills.com, you said?
.org.
.org, yeah, okay. And on your social media as well. Is there an actual the date now for the annual celebration?
Yep, October 22nd. Yep. Okay. So it starts at, it's from 6:30 to 8. Online bidding on the online options is live until, it's live now, and mm-hmm. 25 really interesting items. And then, it's casual. From your own home, you sit back in your pajamas and watch the speakers.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you're shy, you don't even have to be on video. You can just, you know, listen in.
That's right.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Great to talk to you. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I appreciate the time. And hopefully I'll see you there too, online on the 22nd.
You never know. You don't want to be in pajamas, though, believe me. Thanks again, David.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.